has another more.
Mr. President, that we have amended the agenda to have a closed session of the council at the end of the agenda to receive a communication from the assigned lawyer by the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust in response to the Court of Appeals decision that was issued this morning.
All right. So we'll take that business up at the conclusion of our regular business. The first item, and Mr. Freeze told me that these might be one and the same, but so I'll let staff talk about it. Number one is the RPU utility billing software by RPU and Public Works. And then the second item has to do with the stormwater billing charge. If those are in fact one and the same thing, or you want to talk about them together, feel free. So I'll let Richard or Mark or whoever wanted to lead off.
So in your packet, there was a lengthy memo from myself and Kevin Morrissey and Christy Schossel, who are both sitting over there behind Ed. And I think the first sentence of that memo probably addresses agenda item number one. RPU is currently migrating to a new customer service software. Okay? Moving on to item number two.
Fastest item we've ever covered. That's government efficiency.
I think there was a miscommunication that there were RPU was going to do a presentation to you today on their billing software. That's not the case, so just to inform you.
All right.
They are moving to a new software, and that's provided an opportunity for Public Works and RPU to collaborate over the last, it's almost a year now, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Seems like longer. Shorter. But collaborating together on the issue related to stormwater billing. So again, staff has put together this memo that provides you some background information on the need for stormwater and why we stormwater billing and why we do it. RPU has been our partner since 2004 when the utility was established, and has been providing billing services to the stormwater utility for that period of time. We've experienced some challenges along the way, particularly because stormwater charges are calculated based on the amount of impervious area on a parcel, whereas water, electric, and sanitary sewer is based on a measured usage on your utility bill. So we've, from the beginning, have always had this little bit of a disconnect between customer-based billing and parcel-based billing.
Richard, why don't you put that in the table?
I don't have much more to say.
Smart.
Sure, they all say that.
So we've kind of, again, laid out what we've done in the past and addressed in pages 3 and 4 some of the challenges that we've had experienced over this past 12 years regarding our efforts to, again, work collaboratively together to provide a single point at which all city utility bills are calculated and then billed on a single statement. So we've, again, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this. If I want to page ahead to page 4 and 5, we've provided you a couple examples. These are circumstances that, again, we've experienced with the names have been withheld to protect the innocent here, but cases where certain things happen, and because of this difference between a parcel-based calculation and billing and a customer-based, we've experienced some challenges as it relates to making sure that the utility bills, particularly related to stormwater, are accurate. So there's some opportunities that this presents to us, and we've been attempting, as I said, for over the past year to identify ways to improve the customer service experience. Again, things work well as long as people aren't aware that there are problems or that we become aware, but then we run into circumstances and we'd like to provide a higher level of transparency to customers by including parcel details on their monthly statements, so they actually the parcel number, and it, right now your utility bill includes a customer number, and that's RPU's customer number. And what we propose going forward is it will also show the parcels, the parcel numbers related to the stormwater calculation. So on your individual homes, you have a one-to-one relationship. The customer and the parcel owner are the same. And that's the case for about 75% to 80% of all customers and property owners. It's the other 20 to 25% where the property owner and the utility customer are not the same. And so what we have attempted to do in working with RPU is to come up with a system whereby we are going to be able to better identify the parcel information that's attributable to a customer and show that on the bill. One of the challenges that we have is that because of RPU's security, is it NERC? The National Emergency Regulatory Commission?
Electric
Act. Okay. There are certain safeguards related to access to their software and their billing information, which does not allow the public works staff to have that access. And we understand that. We respect that. But there becomes this disconnect then when our public works staff is trying to respond to a customer's question and we don't have access to the information that was billed to them. And so now what we're proposing is that all of the stormwater calculation and customer service requirements and needs are met by RPU through a relationship that's documented in the service agreement that was attached to your packet. We feel that going forward, this will provide a higher level of customer service, and we would recommend your support. This carries a price tag of approximately $200,000 with it. There are two ways for us that we're suggesting you consider, two alternative approaches for how you recover that cost. One is if you recovered it from all utility customers, the cost increase would be about 42 cents per customer per month. If you chose to only recover it from those that require a separate calculation or bill for the stormwater, which would be about that 15 to 20 to 25% of customers, that cost would be approximately $2.15. So again, recover it from everybody or recover it only from those people that don't have that one-to-one match. We don't need you to make that decision today, but we are suggesting that whatever decision you do make, that we consider a rate adjustment effective January 1st of 2018. What we would like from you today, though, is an endorsement of this proposal that would allow Public Works to enter into a service level agreement with RPU for stormwater customer account billing, management, and support services.
All right, questions? And just to clarify, the fee increases largely to cover the two additional positions?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
In the amount of about $200,000. Okay. Questions, comments? Mr. Mayor?
Question. I live in the Townhome Association. How is that calculated, or anybody that's in an apartment complex or something?
Different ways. Again, it's been one of those challenges where it depends on how the common area property is owned. It depends on whether you own the land in which your townhome exists. There's a lot of different circumstances, and probably townhome associations and how attached, multiple unit attached complexes are set up as far as covenants and other things. It's hard to be specific. If we look into it, I can give you, but off the top of my head, I can't tell you whether in your case, the association is billed for that, or you as an individual is billed. I honestly don't know without looking it up. But it's calculated several different ways, depending on how the parcels and ownership of the parcels were set up.
Mr. Campion.
Seems like we are correcting for an issue we have, and so I'm glad to see that. I'm sure at some point we'll see this fancy new software from our view, but the proposal made perfect sense to me, and glad to see we're kind of figuring out what we should get into and get out of, and if they're taking this on, then let's jump on board.
During the past year, we've gone kind of the whole course of alternatives. We looked at pulling out, if you will, pulling away, doing our own utility billing, setting up stormwater utility to be its own billing collection, and when we actually looked at the numbers, if we weren't saving any money, and our queues fixed cost on a lot of the issues related to customer service, we're just going to get spread over the other three.
Right.
Right now, they allocate them out to the various four utilities based on percent of revenue generated, I think, by each of the utilities. So a lot of their fixed costs don't go away, so utility bills for electric, water, and sewer are going to go up, and then we would have had a separate utility over here billing stormwater. So we looked at that. We looked at pulling stormwater and wastewater out, since those are two both non-RPU services. That didn't work out on paper either. So we kind of came back and just said, let's figure out a way with the new software. Unfortunately, this Kayenta software, they have some experience in doing this and have been really good to work with, and we think we got a solution here.
Just a quick, my quick question. For the 42 cents versus $2.15, is this an issue created by the property owner, or is this an issue that the property owner assumes in certain situations? Because I'm trying to attribute responsibility to figure out if it makes sense to just apply it to the people who are in the situation or everyone.
I'll maybe answer that with the if not but for test.
Okay.
If not but for the fact that the property owner and the utility customer are different, there wouldn't be the need to do this.
Okay. So it's the so we could look at this as, if you choose to take your property and assign the responsibility for stormwater fee to someone else, we're going to charge you to have that access to that kind of billing system.
You could charge all of that cost to those type of customers, or you could spread it amongst all.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Ruska.
Richard, if you said that you looked at the different ways of doing this, if Public Works did it, there'd be some additional cost too, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So this is... And you assess the different options.
It would be a lot more than two people necessary.
So this is, in your eyes, this is the most efficient and effective way to do it.
Taking advantage of the fact that there is a city department that's already doing customer service, customer billing, collections. It made sense to work with them to make this work, and the fact that the software has that capability and some modifications to the bill, experience of the software vendor, all brought, every time we looked at some alternative, brought us back to this is the best way to go forward.
And the two full-time employees, that's for sure needed. I mean, you can't start with one and add to a second, or that's
their,
the projected...
Their duties and responsibilities are totally distinctly different.
Okay.
And right now, our best guess is that they would, it would be a full-time requirement for both. As we go down to the future, RPUs have assured us that they will not take advantage of us, if you will, and if they only need a half-time person for the GIS specialist, those responsibilities would be shared with us, and that free time would be afforded to Public Works or some other city department.
Okay, and these are two RPU employees, though, under
yes,
their umbrella.
Two RPU employees.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions, comments? Is there consensus to approve staff's recommendations, Mr. Campy?
I'm trying to make sure the numbers work out.
Sure.
I came up with this about $500,000 worth of revenue from this a year, from finding and making sure all these parcels would be charged. Is that, what's the gap, I guess? Is we're adding $200,000 worth of expense. What's the gap we're addressing?
We don't know.
Okay. So
that's the hard
I'm
part
taking
of
it from the cost. Yeah.
That's the hard part of this. We don't know we don't know the extent of the problem. We only know what we've been able to determine through either customers bringing things to our attention, or us finding things randomly as we look at new ownership information. And there are certain triggers of the key things, but the problem again is we've never over the last 12 years we've had some staff turnover and changes and responsibilities have shifted. So this is one way to get everything corrected. But I can't specifically tell you what the gap is here from revenue that we're not raising versus how much we're overcharging and how that covers. So I'm assuming right now is this is an additional cost. You need to recover that.
Okay.
If that's not the case, as we get into this a year or two, you would have the opportunity to reduce the customer service charge back down to a lower level.
All right. Anyone else?
I'm supportive.
I see most heads going right up and down.
All right. Anything else? All right, thank you. Moving on to item number 3, which is the NLC service line warranty program. I can queue this up. You'll remember that we had a citizen approach council back in March asking why the city of Rochester didn't support the National League of Cities service warranty program. So I took that up and visited with staff at the League of Minnesota Cities, their legal staff. We also talked to the National League of Cities representative for the program. And the cover memo that is provided in your packet, the 3 pages, really is a summary of what I was able to discover. Essentially, it's a program that is not used widely. In fact, it's only used by 14 cities in the state of Minnesota. But having said that, the marks or the comments we heard back or that I heard back were pretty positive. High percentage of satisfaction by consumers that use it. Really no complaints. And if anything, it presented an opportunity to help educate the public is one of the most common comments I heard, because oftentimes I think members of the public are under the misconception that the utilities that come from the street to their house are covered by the city. That's not the case. And that's a rude awakening when they've got a service failure in their front yard. So that was a big deal. As far as the cities that use this or support it or endorse it or don't, it does create what I heard is some extra work potentially for the city, because utilities will still break, and the inclination of citizens is to call City Hall first and say, come fix it. And it's an education opportunity to say, well, you've got this program. Now, presumably, they would have bought into the insurance program. But the company that provides a service, Utility Service Partners, they generally take the business approach of not wanting to come into a community unless they've been welcomed in. They just don't want to get into any sort of confrontational business model. They do tend to use local contractors for all their service work, but fundamentally it's an insurance program so that homeowners, property owners could take avail of this warranty program so that if they have a failure of those services, they're covered. An analogy, I suppose, are individuals that buy an appliance warranty program through Minnesota Energy or something like that. They'll come in, they'll fix your washer, dryer, whatever, for a nominal fee each month. So that's kind of the sum of what I found. Included in the memo was a reason or some questions, some rationale on potentially why more cities don't endorse the program, just unaware or just hadn't been brought up before, or a number of reasons. I did talk with Mr. Freeze, and he did alert me that, you know, there could be some potential increased work on the part of Public Works. If nothing else, we'll still get those questions. And if the property owner is not happy with the service that they get for whatever reason, we'll probably still get those complaints, much like we would today. So let me stop there and just see if there are any questions or where you want to go with this. At the conclusion, all we're obligated to do is at least respond back to the citizen terms of what we discussed, Mr. Wojcik.
So just to be clear, we're only looking at the sewer one, right? We're not looking at because they have a water one as well, NLC?
It's whatever.
I mean, because the one thing, RPU doesn't want us stepping on RPU's program, I think I can say with some amount of certainty. Nobody's glaring at me. So my only take on this would be, if we're going to do it, let's do it with the sewer and, you know, not duplicate on RPU's effort.
Ms. Johnson.
I'm going to ask Mr. Wojcik, can you clarify what RPU does with, or one of the RPU guys, what the program is for that?
Well, let me tell you about the fine work of RPU.
Not what they do, but I mean with the lateral
lines.
Yeah,
we have a service assured program that covers
how
outstanding.
Fabulous.
We cover electrical and water.
Not just for me, for everybody.
Oh, yeah. No,
Fantastic.
So we cover the private portion of the electric and water.
Okay.
We offer insurance for that. And my take from looking into the two, it's our program is a little bit better. But irrespective of that, I don't want to be offering duplicate programs with the, you know, associated with the city of Rochester. But, you know, we don't have anything for sewer. So if it's not a huge burden, I'm okay with that.
Thank you.
And it sounds like there's no outright cost to the city. We just endorse the program. If anything, there's a very minute revenue stream because the company provides some minor amount for each customer that they have. But that should not be a deciding factor in my mind, that revenue stream.
From my standpoint, we have a citizen who wants this. Doesn't sound like it's going to be particularly burdensome. I hope public works staff is not sitting over there just screaming on the inside and saying this is going to be another, you know, huge issue that we're going to have to face.
Okay. Scream now or forever.
Well, I don't scream on the outside generally, so we've had some concerns about it just from, again, the perspective of the workload.
Yeah.
We just know how these public programs, what appears to be a public program, works. And I think the concern we have is that the quality of the work is less than satisfactory. And usually it is. Not in this program, but whether it's a city contractor doing work or the private utility contractors doing work in the right-of-way. 16th Street Southwest comes to mind. They expect the city to fix it. They expect the city to make it right. And that's the concern we have. Is that it's just, we just don't know what impact it could have on the time and effort we will have to take to address this. I'm not saying it's a bad program.
Yep.
People can get this insurance without your endorsement, but it's probably a little more difficult. I think the other thing that I've expressed some concern about is what are people really getting for what they're paying for? If pre-existing conditions are covered, so in other words, in order to get insurance here, you have to have your lateral televised to determine what condition it's in, just like you have to have a physical before you can get medical insurance. I don't know that, and I think that would be the other thing is what responsibility does the city have to provide some information to the public to make them aware of potentially what this program is all about and what some of the concerns might be.
And I would fully expect that the provider, the service provider, they're responsible for the marketing. We would work with them to help maybe educate the public. But as I read through their materials, they listed a number of the services they provide and deductibles and all of that. But one of the other things I discovered is that apparently the League of Minnesota Cities, they have their legal staff have worked with the provider to work through and create that agreement. So, and I'm not positive on that. Maybe Mr. Adkins knows, but it sounds like we have some other expert resources that if we were to invite this company to participate in Rochester, we've got some other resources to help work through the details of that agreement. Mr. Campion.
In my understanding of how this would work would be a pipe gets damaged or a sewer gets damaged. They call us. We would say, you know, that's not generally the city's responsibility. Do you have a service line warranty program? They would then, assuming they had it, call this program would line up the contractor, come out and do the work. Mm-hmm. I guess your concern, Mr. Freeze, is that the work quality then seems almost as though it's backed by the city, because we backed the program is kind of the concern.
Right.
And
your name is on the letter.
Right.
Your name is on the pamphlet that gets distributed. That's the concern I have. And again, this is not a fall-on sword issue for us.
Right.
Just, I want to make sure that you're aware of some of our concerns.
And I think that kind of thing would have to be clearly set forth in whatever agreement we create. You know, we're not liable, we're not a party to the warranty or anything of that nature. So.
Yeah, I think there's the legal one, right? Like, there's the legal one. Yeah. And I see, like, what often happens is we get put in these positions where legally we're not required to participate. But then this, I feel like I'm elected sometimes for moral judgment as well. And you go, well, darn, this seems troublesome that we're leaving these people with not very many options on the way out. And I don't know, I mean, probably not participating in the forum probably doesn't help us much in that regard. I probably get the phone call anyway, but I don't know. This isn't one that I have a strong feeling on either way, and I was kind of dispositioned to not participate, but I'm kind of looking for
Mr. Bilgebach.
I just think that Mr. Freeze brings up a good point about making sure that we know all the prerequisites before we walk into this thing. That it seems to make really good sense that if all of a sudden you're supposed to have your wine telescope and you have it and then you have a failure, that they walk away. I think that's where Mr. Kampkin's comments, we would really kind of catch the brunt of that. So I don't see anything really wrong with it, but I do think we need to make sure we have all the information before we walk into it.
So I had a question for Mr. Adkins based on Mr. Kampkin's comment. Is there an implied or actual liability on the part of the city should we happen to endorse a particular company or program?
That word endorse throws me. By endorse, you mean make available or to indicate that this is the one you should use if you use any?
That's the word they use, is that cities endorse these companies.
By simply allowing the company to operate on lines that apparently RPU might, or Public Works, I guess, would.
I think endorsement is something different here. It's basically that the city's receiving payment for this endorsement. And the endorsement is basically just like the League of Minnesota Cities, LMC and NLC both have endorsed this, and their name, their logo and name appear on the literature.
And the city receives a payment for
50 cents a customer.
There could that be that argument made that they've entered into, we've basically undertaken a duty.
So again, irrespective of whatever disclaimer we could put on there, there is no disclaimer that will ever satisfy an angry person mad at the city that wants us to fix it.
And maybe not accepting the monetary contribution helps. I don't know, but
okay, Mr. Ruskin.
Well, I appreciate Rand's work on this. My gut tells me to stay away from this. I just don't feel like you believe it's the right thing. I think the perception is once the city puts their name on it that ultimately we have some responsibility towards making sure if the performance isn't right or the people aren't treated right or whatever. And it does say 95%, 97% satisfaction rate, but I guess I just don't really see that this is something that I believe is. We don't want to do duplication of services as RPU already has the water main covered. With that option, so I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit concerned not knowing a lot about this that I could feel really good about recommending that we go ahead with this.
Randy, I have a question for you. So in your research, what is the length of the city's endorsement? Is this an annual renewable type thing, or is it a minimum 5 years?
They didn't say. We didn't get into that detail.
Are there other options for people out there to do anything like this?
I think there probably are other programs.
They mentioned only one other company in Minnesota that operates, but they have a pretty low exposure. This USP is the predominant one. But just to clarify, even if we do nothing, that doesn't stop a property owner from contacting and trying to get warranty service on their own.
Can they do it from this company?
I don't know.
This company says they will not go into the community.
Gotcha.
But that doesn't say they will not. Well, our only service line warranty provider that will never market to customers without consent from the city. So again, maybe that's just their marketing perspective.
Somebody calls them, will they take the call and do the service?
Yeah. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings on this, but I think from the research you had outlined for us, the positive experience that maybe some of these other communities had and the high satisfaction rate at least gives me some assurance. So,
one thing I noticed is that the 14 communities that do have it tend to be smaller communities. They perhaps don't have the resources or wherewithal to maybe deal with some of those issues. I don't know if that's a factor or not, but.
And I agree with those. I don't have a real strong feeling, but I do think that before we would enter into something like that, we need some of these questions answered.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor?
First question is, why do you say 14 when there's only 12 listed?
Why
do you say 14 when there's only 12 listed on the page?
That was a number that came from them. I don't know if that information was dated though in the presentation.
The other is, and I think I understand this, but the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust is who we have when it's outside the home. Is that right?
When it's in the street.
In the street.
This covers from the street to the home.
I've been in, not in the middle of, but had with a particular organization in town that's had a major sewer problem that a lot of it was covered, but then what happened inside the building is still an issue with them. And so, but this one may or may not help with that.
Yeah.
So, just so the council clear, I'm not opposed to the program. I just think that we really need to make sure we understand what our role and responsibility is going to be if you, in fact, choose to endorse. So are you going to require this company to do a certain amount of PR up front? Are you going to mandate certain things in the rollout of the program, those types of things? I think it's more about how this is conveyed and represented to the citizens and the property owners in the community than it is the program trade for people who want to buy insurance. I mean, we don't have any concern about that. It's just I think it's the word endorsement. And the fact that you're getting paid for that, what does that tell your constituency?
Now, and you'll notice I didn't make a recommendation in the cover memo. I just,
it is what it is.
But one other thing I was going to notice or note is that last year LMC, I should say USP, became a LMC Business Alliance partner. So, and I'm not sure exactly what that means, but
I was
my point in that is that they will be at the LMC conference that's held here in June.
My thought is that it doesn't sound like anyone is particularly strong one way or the other on this. So we kind of have a little summary of what the particular concerns are. We pay the League of Minnesota Cities and National League of Cities a lot of money. So, you know, maybe we can pass these concerns on to those organizations and they can put together, you know, their responses since they both are endorsing this product as well. And maybe they provide us a little better level of comfort with that.
Well, they don't endorse USP, and they don't.
Okay.
So they're kind of ambivalent about it as well.
Okay, I was thinking
they went so far as to they signed up USP as a business partner. I don't know. That's just kind of a
they take money from them. They take money from them.
But they don't directly endorse. NLC does. Ms. Johnson.
So I'm stink at acronyms.
Yes.
USP is going to be at the League of Minnesota annual meeting in June.
Correct.
Is that correct? So that will give us an opportunity to talk to them.
Right. They'll have
okay.
a booth, apparently.
Okay. I think that's great. I don't feel strongly about it either, honestly. But it's insurance, and insurance is always, in my opinion, one person pays a lot of money, never has to use it when somebody else does. So it's an at-risk thing for the person, the homeowner, to invest in my opinion. So
okay.
I want to have those questions answered before we say, yes, let's stand behind that.
Mr. Ruska.
I guess, too, Richard, do you have any estimates on what kind of time this would take you to be involved with it, with your department? And if so, also the take rate of what they're projecting out to see what kind of, I can't imagine that 50 cents a year per customer is going to be much of a fee.
I don't know if it's 50 cents a year or 50 cents a month. I honestly don't know.
It said 50 cents a year per
customer. Okay.
I forget what it said.
So that's about $20,000.
Pretty minor.
So in your eyes, is that going to cover the extra cost you might have to put in this, or?
Yeah, I don't think staff and I would amount to that
okay.
amount.
Okay. Hey.
All right.
Get some answers.
So we can choose to just take no action at this point. If people are inclined, you can visit with USP when they're here in June.
Is that a sufficient response to the member of the public? I think saying, you know, we're not comfortable with the information we have available at this time and are continuing to research our options in the area. Because, yeah, generally I don't see anyone that's kind of super passionate about it. And to me, some of the concerns are kind of, what do I like to say? You have to consider the ramification, and I just get concerned that the downside could be pretty significant if something went wrong.
And that's fine. That's exactly what I would intend to do, a memorandum to that effect or letter. You know, it's not that we're necessarily opposed to the program, but there are some questions. I'll also use it as an opportunity to make sure they're aware of the water supply service program. And leave it at that.
Did you just never leave home without those pamphlets?
Newer audience.
Well, as long as I've got one, I can scan it and I'll have it.
Hey, Randy?
Just
a comment, I guess, if you're going to be talking with this group at the Leeds conference, I would ask maybe if they're able to divide the program that covers just sewer.
Yep.
Yep.
So
that's one of the questions.
Our existing service assured program on the water.
Right. That's one of the questions I would ask. And then the other key question I'll have is, can a member, a citizen of Rochester, property owner, just come talk to you on their own?
Sure.
Without any city involvement.
All right. I kind of two birds, one stone.
One of the key questions is this endorsement term. So your endorsement for how long and what happens when you decide not to endorse it anymore? Does the program go away and people who pay $4 a month for the last 5 years, are they out of luck? What happens?
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Anything else on that topic? Mr. Reeves passed out, I believe, the topics that we'll consider next time at our next committee of the hall. Some department updates and then an update on the city administrative recruitment. Before we go to the closed portion of the meeting, were there any other business items? Mr. Wojcik?
So, planning to talk about this tonight, we'll see where it goes, but back a few years ago, and I have the from the minutes, Council Member Snyder moved, so seconded by Council Member Hickey, to designate 718 West Center Street as a potentially historic based on, at the time, 19B.04DNH, and that a demolition permit could be granted. We granted the demolition permit for the movement of the home. Subsequent to that, I asked how to make sure the home is viable in the new location, and Building Safety Director Johnson and City Attorney Atkins stated that successfully getting a building permit would accomplish what I was trying to see happen for the home. Mr. Hamilton, Mac Hamilton, stated that he has committed $240,000 to pay for the new property, move the home, and other related expenses. If Mr. Edmondson does not want the property, he will bring the building up to code for use. The issue that we have is that in the transition of the ordinances, not everything necessarily translates, because we did designate that as a potentially historic property. This is the Kutsky House, and essentially it was left without a roof for a very long period of time, so I'm, you know, sure it's mush at this point. But what I wanted to do is follow up with two motions, nothing that's immediately actionable. The first motion would be to direct staff to prepare an amendment to appropriate sections to define the term historic structure designated property, and the definition should include those structures declared to be potentially historic sites under Chapter 19B as existed prior to December 5th, 2016. That's when we switched the ordinance. And the second motion would be to direct staff to prepare an amendment to, again, appropriate sections to specify in greater detail the consequences and the city responses should one commit demolition by neglect. Basically, it's closing the loop on what we were told was going to happen, what the neighborhood thought was going to happen, and what's happening today.
Mr. Hickey.
So I guess my thoughts, I mean, I'd like staff input before we start making motions to change ordinances.
Well, and this would only be them to prepare the amendments, so that would give them the opportunity to give you the input.
Mr. Bilnebeck.
And I think, you know, we have committees, and this is where the HPC should be involved as well, and have those types of discussions.
Yep.
And then put as far as consequences of letting the property go by neglect.
That's a really good point. I totally support that. That we get, if we're going to start this with staff, we have staff take it first to the historic preservation.
Yep, and let them get
This is only for initiating tonight.
Well, and that's fine. I'm just saying, we talked about making sure committees are involved. Here's a group that we've gone through, the mayor has gone through an extensive time to rebuild this committee. This should go back to them.
That's fine.
So is this prospective then, rather than...
This specifically deals with the Kutsky House as well.
So it would affect the current house.
And the way you read the motion, if you take what was declared potentially historic under the old ordinance and include that in the definition of designated property under the new ordinance for purposes of demolition, then you're able to take some action with respect to those properties that were declared potentially historic under the ordinance, or old ordinance. That term doesn't exist anymore. And so we have a misconnect.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure everybody's aware of what...
Yes, this specifically deals with the Kutsky House and the promises that were made there.
So to what end? That's where are we going with that? Because it is what it is as far as the dwelling today. And either way, we're going to probably some sort of demolition request is going to land in front of us.
I don't know if it would even come to us, would it? I don't think it would.
This active one?
Yeah.
I believe it would, because right now the demolition, the council did not approve demolishing that building. They approved moving it as a potentially historic site. And I would assume that still stands.
Does
where if they want to demolish it, it needs to come before the council to get that approval.
Under the old ordinance.
Under the old ordinance.
You know. And I don't know what the appropriate actions are going to be. There are communities that would make them rebuild the historic structure block by block because they neglected it. There's potential to be, you know, I suppose fines, changes in land use. But the idea is that you know, there should be consequences for doing this.
Well, and I think we have to be careful there too. In the minutes that you cited, in the same set of minutes, the neighborhood also said that if it were moved, they would buy it to the tune of about $600,000 and restore it. Mr. Edmondson said he could make money on it.
I don't think they actually committed to doing that.
Mr. Campion.
I want to make sure we stay material. And the thing I was going to ask is, the non-existence of the old ordinance does not remove the requirements that were placed upon this property, correct? That we've amended and replaced the historical preservation ordinance is not...
The declaration as a potentially historic site still stands. The problem is, under the new ordinance, it doesn't recognize that designation.
And so the statement that this would still come before the council, though it's...
That would be... we would have to apply the old ordinance to any demolition permit request that was filed.
Okay.
What Councilmember Woljak is suggesting is, for purposes of demolition by neglect, we need to go back in time and make sure that those sites declared potentially historic are covered. Currently, they're not.
And just one follow-up, if I can. You have an oft-quoted failure to meet expectations by a contractor chapter in our ordinance. It's they didn't live up to the expectations the city had of them, thus they're being removed from 61A.
You always set the stage.
I'm at a loss.
Okay, where the contractor from the city doesn't do what they said they were going to do.
Oh, 8526.
8525.
Yeah, 25. Is it that applies to anybody who's in arrears in terms of any conditions of approval, or taxes, or fines, or penalties? Cannot seek approval of any other request.
Someone that moved a building said they would meet an expectation of something like this.
The problem was that wasn't reduced to a condition of approval.
Okay, perfect. That's what I want to make sure. Thank you.
Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, so I think everything you've raised is legitimate. I just don't think it's too fine a point to say, before we direct staff to do an ordinance change, I just want to make sure we've got the discussion framed properly, and that's maybe what the ultimate outcome is. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the next step is, direct staff to bring it back to us, but not necessarily inform an ordinance change at this point.
And here's my thing. As long as my intention was not to bring this up tonight, I was going to bring this up on June 5th, but it was when Kiger called me over the weekend and said they pulled a demo permit on that property. I want to make sure that we're not going to shoot ourselves in the feet if we don't act tonight on this. And it sounds like from what Mr. Atkins is saying is we won't, because they still have to bring that before us.
Well, again, the old ordinance would apply, and so that, what I don't have that in front of me here.
Well, basically, so what the old ordinance just says is that if it's deemed potentially historic and they want to pull a demo permit, the demolition permit has to come before the council for approval. That happened, the council approved moving the property but not demolishing it. Now they want to demolish it.
So they have to...
So they have to come back before the council to request the demolition of the building now. So it was because of when the timing of the demolition permit was submitted... The building safety, it didn't make this agenda, but will be on the next agenda for discussion by the council.
Does that have to go back to the HPC to have them review it? Since it says potential site, do they have to review it prior to coming to the council?
No, not in this situation. They've already done that review of the property. Those steps have already been done. And the council took the HPC's recommendation. Designated this property, didn't designate the other one. There was two houses. Remember,
right.
One got demolished, one was
Conley.
One was moved to demolish, one was moved to move. So basically, under the old ordinance, now that they're instead of wanting to move it, which they want to demolish it, it has to come back to you for that approval. So that comes on the agenda for June 5th. Okay.
So, and maybe there's a way that between now and then, if you could write up the wording of exactly, because I think we're on the same direction here. I don't necessarily. But if there's a way that we could come up with some language on what we are telling staff to do so that we have something to discuss on June 5th.
Well, and that's why I asked the question, what's the end goal here? I have no problem with wanting to clean. It sounds like our new ordinance is lacking and needs to be touched up. Where I'm having a little concern is if we're trying to apply it retroactively, if the reality is that we can drive by, the building is what it is today. So
yeah.
Why could we not... I mean, that's going to be the question in front of us. Do we approve the demolition or not, irrespective of what changes we make to the ordinance? I almost see those as two separate questions.
I do.
I understand, and I think there's a little bit of a frame for me is, like, some of this is about future implications of ignoring a historic preservation by the city, if it's deemed historic and you willingly or through negligence on your own part ignore that, what's the consequence? And it can seem separate, but it also is one and the same, because certainly we all acknowledge, I think when we were drafting this, we said, where's the consequence? What's the consequence? And it was kind of left as you have to take its situation by situation, but I think this kind of forcing the hand now to be like, we do have to consider the consequence, and if we don't, then there's really no practical point to having a preservation ordinance.
And I would say again, I see it as two separate things. There's going to be whether or not we approve the demolition permit, but then also what were the consequences for taking a historic structure and choosing to not have a roof on it for a year and a half.
And that's where I say, that it'll have to stand on its own merits, whether it's should be demolished or not.
What about the consequences? Are you open to having consequences for
that?
That's
whether
the,
we're talking historic property or
yeah.
Other building projects. That's always been a difficult one for us to deal with. Again, not just historic properties, but we can have a development project, a road project, a building project of any kind, and if people aren't performing the way we thought they should, what are the consequences? How do we mitigate that? And that's so this is going to be another one of those.
Good to talk about it.
Yeah, it
how
is.
Do you,
you know, I'd like to think that in this case, the developer had the best of intentions. I wouldn't spend the money to build a new foundation and the expense of moving the structure only to let it fall down. I suspect there's more to it than that, that they got into it and figured out, wow, this is cross prohibitive, and now what do we do? And in the meantime, it's that.
So how would we go about strategically separating the conversation? Because I'm sure they're going to have a story about what happened.
Sure.
And we need to talk a little bit objectively about consequences without necessarily making it seem like this is specifically about them. Because this could also, you know, the same sort of neglect could happen all over the city to any historic property. So is there a way we can cue this up to kind of separate those conversations out so we're not feeling like we're going after a particular individual when really we're talking about giving the, I don't want to say teeth because that makes it angry, but giving some teeth to an ordinance that is intended to help us preserve properties that are important to the community. So, you know, if, and frankly, there may be this, that people just say it doesn't need teeth and there should be no consequence. That's at least a decision we should have before we probably head in collaboratively to this meeting about a very personal story that's going to happen that might cloud our vision about what we actually think objectively about some of these situations. Anyway, I'm not sure how to set that up.
Because, and I agree with the question that was posed, I'm not opposed to looking at consequences. If you have an ordinance with no teeth, you know, what's the point? I'm just not sure what form those consequences take. That's
sure.
That's,
and I don't know that either. That was part of, I think the wording I had in here is, prepare an amendment to put greater detail of what the consequences of city responses should be, because that leaves it open for
Mr. Russell.
Well, when we went into this whole historic preservation, everything with it, we knew there was going to be some twists and turns along the way, and, you know, I think this is an example of it. I think we need to figure out, you know, how we're going to deal with things like this and set a precedence and have that in there, although everything's a little bit different, but this is an interesting scenario that I think this would be would this be a hearing that we would do on the demolition permit?
I don't think it's required. I'll have to look and see.
I'm just wondering how, you know, it'd be how we're going to get the, you know, some balance of information on this,
right?
How it got to where it got. Is that, you know, is that going to be through a statement or?
So June 5th, is that by or by some legal statute that it has to be heard on June 5th?
No, that was just the next council after, you know, deadline after we received the application.
I mean, honestly, I feel like we're unprepared to hear this on June 5th, and we have some conversations to have before that. That's, I mean, obviously, I don't know if everyone agrees. If there's no legal ramification, that means we have to hear it on the 5th.
I think you're taking his phrase, "will be before you," a little bit too far. You can still discuss on June 5th and decide how you want to handle it. You still have up to 120 days to respond to the application.
Okay.
So we could table or ask for public hearing? Or
right.
We could just not hear it, right?
Yeah.
When he says "here," he means it's on the agenda for some action.
Mr. Hickey?
And is that, so that's the consent agenda that we're talking about? Or?
No, it would not have been, you know, consent agenda. I'm trying to look at the old ordinance,
okay,
what it called for. It had to be a council decision on it, and staff really doesn't have a consent,
right,
recommendation on something like this, so it would have been reports and recommendations.
Yeah,
okay,
that's kind of
right.
Randy Johnson, is there a time limit for building permit issuance?
No.
So there's 120 days of
permit? Does or does not?
Does.
Oh, okay. I thought there wasn't.
Mr. Bildeback.
But I agree with Mr. Ruska, the fact that if we're going to hear the whole story, we need to almost make this a public hearing, because I'm sure there's a lot of questions that people will have for the
mm-hmm.
developer of this property.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't allow testimony, then, or if we just say, well, we're only going to hear from the developer, we're not hearing some of the things that they may have witnesses to bring forward. I mean, the problem that I have with this whole project is it sat for the last couple of years, 2-3 years, and we've heard nothing, or just little whimpers here or there that there are issues. But once they discovered the issues, we never heard about it. But I don't know, again, we don't know when they found the issues. So I think there, in my case, I'd like to have this a public hearing, because I think there's a lot of questions that I would like to ask of the developer at this point.
I think the neighborhood would probably like that too, because obviously they're feeling, you know, bitten on this one for a number of reasons. You heard a little bit of our discussion on what we're looking to do, and it sounds like, you know, we want to have the discussion. We're not necessarily explicitly looking to create the ordinance tonight. Can you give us some recommendations tonight on how to proceed?
I'll do my best.
Mr. Campion.
If that wraps that one up, I just have one other item for the other business. I know we have...
We can always talk about a little bit more under other business tonight.
Perfect.
Campion.
So This is what I assume to be the armory proposal. Is that anyone confirm?
Yes, it is.
So I came up against what I think is just an interesting decision I wanted to bring by the council. Is I was approached by one of the applicants to discuss their application, and I stopped them, and I said I wasn't sure that that was appropriate given that we're in the middle of the RFP review period. Before I had any meetings with any of the applicants, I just wanted to run by you all what you think is appropriate and what level of engagement you plan on having with the different applicants. Normally in an RFP process I've been through, we're not allowed to communicate with individuals. You can't continue to have conversations. You have to really base it on what was provided. And so in an abundance of caution, I kind of said, let's not potentially taint this process, and we will kind of come back and maybe talk to you once the council has agreed that we're going to talk to applicants, or once the council has agreed we're not going to talk to applicants. At this point, I didn't feel like I had a really strong case in either direction, but kind of wanted to maybe hear you guys out and see if there's consensus on, do we want to have individual meetings with applicants, or do we want to not have individual meetings and wait until the time when we potentially invite them forward to talk?
And I guess I appreciate Nick bringing this forward, because it'd be best for us all to be on the same page moving forward with it. So I'm okay either way, but I appreciate it, and I think we should kind of figure out so we're consistent with everybody on this.
And it's a good question. I will say I did meet with one of the proponents. I treated it like any other developer project that might come forward where they want to show us renderings or they show us. That's how I initially learned about the Legion site, for example. Here's our idea, our concept for this, and at no time, I agree with you, at no time should you offer, you should change this or that, or, give feedback, but I've treated it as a way to gather information. So I did, in this case, meet with one of them at their request. Others, Mr. Wojcik.
Yeah, I've had a couple of requests that I'm just kind of sitting on right now, but I would, the other thing, too, is this is a little bit hard because we're not in a quasi-judicial capacity here, so it's not like we're evaluating this against some criteria. And one of the things that I'm interested in going back with some questions, hypotheticals like, would you do this project while the city maintains ownership of the lots, or would you accept a lease of the building instead of outright a long-term lease instead of ownership? Some of those questions I'd really like to know what our options are too.
And when I talked about it with an individual who I felt really bad about having to cut off because I just didn't put two and two together about what they were asking me to meet about. It was kind of a situation where I have a standing breakfast and they walk in and want to talk about it. For one thing I would, I guess, if we're going to do it, which I'm perfectly happy meeting with people and doing that, I guess I would ask that we kind of pool questions back to applicants through the city administration versus having individual exchanges where everyone's maybe pursuing similar answers and not getting a public feedback about what the answers are. Because I do feel like there's this potential when we get several different individuals that ask different questions, not having everyone operate with the same understanding of what projects are coming forward and what they would be presenting for the place. And if one person's operating with one idea and another, that's actually why I like not meeting with them and just going by what's on the submission. And that isn't in any way, I think I talked to Mr. Bilderbeck about it a while back, not to criticize people who want to meet with them, just when we don't all agree not to meet them, there's a surety that we're not operating on different information. That's my take.
Mr. Ruskin.
Can staff refresh us on the timeline of the process and what
June 5th we're going to
have? When is it going to have back in front of the council and committee the whole meeting on June 5th?
Okay. For what purpose?
Well, basically for review and discussion of what the next steps are. If you want to choose one, do you want to narrow it down to a certain number to do interviews or whatever it might be, but just to get more direction.
Because the next step really isn't stated in the request for proposal.
No, right. It's not stated.
And I think staff, you were going to offer maybe some comments on the proposal. At some point in this process, I would very much like to hear a presentation by the five proponents. I mean, what's written and how they would present it are two different things. And plus, that gives that opportunity for questions.
Well, so I'm just wondering if a public hearing wouldn't be the way to do it, to give, you know, fair to everybody and keep us all in the same context of,
yeah,
of being able to listen to them and ask questions that we all can hear. And you know, it's kind of out there for everybody. So, you know, that's probably what I'm going to support at next week's meeting, or what the June 5th meeting is, to do that.
Well, I mean, I guess if you want to, you can just, we can set that now. So at the June 5th meeting, we can just have them line up and come and do presentations if you'd like. You can give them each a certain amount of time to do a presentation and have that as your next step if you want to. Or we could even, yeah.
At a committee of the whole? Or
whichever, however you'd like to handle.
Well, okay, I won't get into that. Ms. Johnson.
I would be on board with everybody hearing the proposal from the applicants at the same time, personally. I have, full disclosure, I have met with one of the applicants, though. So just to
I
be
think
clear
we just
enough.
Disclose who
yeah.
we met with, and,
yeah.
and if we're going to wait, we say, no, we
yeah.
met before we agreed, and now we're going to hear the rest of them
right.
say no.
I'm okay with that. Then everybody's, we all start on the same page. But
Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I don't need any more meetings, but I mean, I don't see any harm. I mean, I just think, in some ways, I think that ship has sailed. I mean, there's already been some meetings. So I think if, I think people want to meet individually, I don't think it's a problem. But I think certainly that the overriding process where we'd either have presentations at the COW or the formal public hearing would be hear the same information at the same time. I think that's also an important part of the process.
Yeah, I treated it, it's an individual decision, however council members like to handle it. I take pretty much any meeting that's requested, whether it's a project or my taxes are going up or I don't like the pothole, kind of, I'll meet with you. And but I think it's, again, it's very important in a project like this, not certainly not to convey, well, here's how I would vote. We know that will get you in hot water. But not even, I don't even convey, you know, aspect of a project that I like or just, anyway, I just use it as information gathering.
Yeah, I have been contacted. I have not met with them. But my question then is, I was looking at some of the groups that were supporting them or recommending that they do it, and I was found some of those interesting. I was going to contact some of those. So that should probably be identified now, too, if we don't want, if we're saying don't contact, you know, I haven't at this point, and I turned down any meeting requests so far, but I think the fact that we want to make sure we're all clear, that was one of the things I found interesting with some of the groups that recommended.
I'm just trying to be equitable for us and for them. So,
I
do understand where you guys are coming from. For me, it's not just my calendar, which I'm sure you all seem to appreciate, but it's the, you know, how do we challenge them all equally? And it might just happen that some of them have some retired people involved, that some have people who are working all day and can't get those meetings set up and don't have that time. But I really like the idea of just queuing them up on the fifth and doing 15 minutes and saying 15 minutes, we'll have the
right.
timer up here. You have 15 minutes
yeah.
and cut them off. And I'm gonna give everyone cover. My explanation back to all of them is gonna be I'm not doing personal meetings before the 15 minute
that's
presentation. Right. You can present it. Everyone will get that information. And that's all.
Yep.
That's fine.
I'll tell them the same thing so they can be equally mad at us.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I think to be fair to everybody, we want to be consistent, and that's what I'm hearing from Nick, and that's what I would agree with. So if we set it up on the first meeting in June to say, okay, each have 15-minute blocks, 5 minutes of question and answer, something, and get them all through that. But we already have a couple things. I was just looking to see what we already have on the agenda, a couple other things, so I'm not sure how that all squeezes in. You can make it, massage
I'll it. Make it work.
Agreed.
All right. Anything else on that topic? Okay.
So,
any other business?
Sure. So, again, not that we need a lot of extra meetings, but we haven't said we're prohibiting anybody from meeting with individuals, right?
We couldn't say that.
Well, no. We don't have an informal agreement. Whatever.
I would prefer that you all agreed to do what I'm going to do, but I also understand that people operate differently. I
view it as just. I get it, the idea of the equity and so forth, but I also view it as due diligence on my part.
Mm-hmm.
If I want more information, I'll get it.
At least we have a process that's consistent and open and fair to everybody, and then if they still insist on meeting with you, I suppose, you know, I mean, I'd probably do the same thing, but I'm going to drive it towards, you know, the decision to be fair to everybody. Be done.
I like that.
I'm speaking good luck getting in my calendar in the next 3 weeks.
All right.
Ask away.
Gosh. Any other business? With that said, then I will turn it over to the city attorney to
Council will now go into a closed meeting to receive a communication from and have a discussion with the city's League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust assigned legal counsel regarding the status of and the litigation strategy for the case of Rochester City Lines versus City of Rochester and First Transit, Minnesota Court of Appeals number 816-1515, May 17, 2017. This case involves the city's selection of the operator of its publicly funded bus transit system for the time period beginning January 1, 2017. Closed meeting will occur pursuant to Minnesota statute, section 13.2.